Hello, good morning. Thanks for getting up so early. Welcome to the Scaling Your Community panel. We're here in the alphabet room, A, B, C, D. And actually, can we make the lights like a little more romantic in here? I think it's a little too bright. It's a little dimmer. So, just a quick introduction for those of you who I haven't met yet. My name is Matt Mullenweg. I'm probably best known for being from Houston, which is where I grew up. I love Texas. I grew up in Houston. I'm very happy and honored to be here. This was actually the first tech conference I ever went to in my life. I just sort of bummed a gas card for my parents and stayed with my sister outside of Austin and came to South by Southwest. And it was a really magical experience for me and sort of got me started on everything that I do today. So definitely, I know we're sort of 3 days into the thing, but cherish every moment and try to meet as many people as possible, because for me, just starting out a little kid in Houston, it was really powerful to be here. All right, probably best known for making software called WordPress, which is blog publishing software, although a lot of people are using it sort of as a CMS now. It's available in hosted and non-hosted flavors. Blogs started to get a lot of spam, so I started working on some software called Akismet, which basically keeps all the crap off of your blogs and wikis and bug trackers and everything. Out of curiosity, do we have any WordPress or Akismet users here? Wow. Wow, good crowd. Well, hey, thanks. That's actually pretty neat. Anyway, WordPress started to grow, Akismet started to grow about a little over a year ago. I decided to found a company called Automattic so I could focus on this stuff full time. And so for the last year, I've basically been, you know, doing what I wanted to do my whole life, which is hacking on open source software and working with great people. And it's been definitely a company is a type of learning experience. So we'll wrap up the introductions, but if you'd like to know any more, you can go to Google, type in Matt, and press the I'm feeling lucky button over there, and you'll find out everything you need to know. I'll take you to my blog. So, scaling your community. What does that mean? What is the problem? We actually come across the problem every single day on the web. We just don't notice it. Here's a good example of the problem. There we go. This is a forum software. This is actually Seaman Art. Seaman Art. Just to clarify there. And you can't tell it, but this page actually goes on for about four or five more screens. They've got like 40 or 50 different forums. All with like 1 to 10 posts in them. So it's basically a bunch of empty rooms. This is a blog, Joe's Journal. I did not make this up. he has a post, you know, saying, hi, Joe, blah, blah, blah. He only has two posts, actually, not counting Hello World. And then his last post says, new design. Hey, I switched the design around some. What do you think? I don't know if you're familiar with WordPress. I'm not sure how much he switched the design around there. But that's actually not what's important about this slide. It's actually this. There's no comments on that entry. And this is actually sort of the death rattle of many blogs, is they generally have the last post is going to be something asking for feedback, because blogs are fundamentally about communication. You know, you might not want to communicate to the world, but you want to talk to someone, usually. And so the last thing people do is generally saying, hey, sort of a cry for help, if you will. This is a Friendster profile of Miss Glenda Bautista. Friendster was the hottest site on the web, you know, South by Southwest, Best of Web Award, a couple of years ago. What happens? This is a wiki from our WordPress.org codex. Looks very, pretty interesting. But if you actually wanted to get the weather and clicked on that link, you can't see this, but you might not be able to read it. Some spammers had come in and replaced all the links with links to something very, very different. So probably wasn't the kind of showers you were looking for. And and that's, you know, it's social software that's being used in a way that wasn't intended. Fortunately, it was reverted a little bit later. This is a screenshot from Seth Godin's blog. Really love Seth Godin, fantastic author. Who can tell what's wrong with this? No comments. Wow, you guys are good. Yeah, there's no comments on this blog. All he has is some trackbacks. And you look at the trackbacks and, you know, half of them are stuff that you wouldn't want associated with yourself. The people who read Seth's blog could have an amazing conversation, but why isn't it happening? This one, you're so lucky that I wasn't able to get animation to work in Keynote. Otherwise, you'd experience this in its full glory. This is a MySpace page. It's doing something different. This was actually a deliberately ugly MySpace page from the Zay Frank contest. I knows me some ugly MySpace. And interestingly, when I was looking, going through the entries for that contest, I went through like the top 15, and they were all normal again. It seems like all the people who participated in that contest making ugly MySpace pages switched them back after the contest was done, which was something I hadn't anticipated. Finally, cover your eyes if you weren't offended before. Slashdot, a good example of a community which scaled in an interesting way, and some would say a very bad way, and their traffic has been on the decline for years now. All right, so what's going on here? We have some examples of some websites. Are there, what's different? First of all, what is scaling, right? What does that mean? Scaling is a very common thing to talk about in the realm of servers or something like that. You have a scalable application. But what does it mean for a community or for people or for guys like you in the room? Thought about this a long time, and this is what I came up with. Scaling is being as useful to the last 100,000 people as you were to the first 100,000 people. So when you're at this stage, and you're just a guy like me up here with a mic in front of a half-empty room, how are those people in the room going to have the same experience as when you're over here, and it's completely packed? How can you keep that intimacy and the touch and the relationship people have with each other while you're moving up and up and up? And that's a tough problem. And so I think the way to look at that is like anything. Oh, wrong presentation. You have to start with a good foundation. You have to start as early as possible, because just like if you're building something, you have to lay the groundwork. And if you don't, you're going to be on a shaky foundation. And, the taller you get and the more you grow, the higher the probability that an earthquake is going to come and topple you over. So luckily, there are patterns for scaling community. There are things that have worked before. This has been happening online for longer than I've been alive. And so there's things we can look to for building good foundations. And so I've assembled actually four sort of overlying key principles that I've sort of distilled from a number of examples, and I'm just going to go through them now. First, start as simply as possible. This is really super important. Have you ever been to a party that had maybe 20 or 30 people, but it was in a really, really big room, and it felt kind of empty? Now, versus that, like I heard the consummating party was last night, a ton of people packed into a really small area. It's got a totally different feel. And even if you have the same 20 people, the smaller space you put them in, the more comfy it feels. It's like that forum we saw a few minutes ago. They had 40 forums with 1 to 10 posts each. They had one forum with 400 posts. It'd be a very different kind of vibe, a very different kind of interaction that people are having with everything that's going on there. So you have to start as simply as possible. I've got some examples here. On the left, there's a sheet of paper. On the right, there's the closest picture I could find to showing the thickness of actually what runs our government every day. Can anyone guess what the one on the left is? It's the founding document, actually. It's the Bill of Rights. A single sheet of paper, which was set the foundation for the country that we all live in. Arguably the greatest democracy ever. And on the right, we have the Federal Register. A subscription to the Federal Register is just a little background, is sort of a daily publication with everything that happened, all the regulations and things that published in the government that day. You can subscribe to this. It's $939 a year, which is amazing. That's a government price. And it's just this huge, huge, huge thing. People, libraries only keep, a year or two of records on it. Actually, one of my idols and an economist, Milton Friedman, actually used to track the number of pages in the Federal Register and count them as a measure of freedom in society. And his thesis was that with the number of pages was going down, the society was becoming more free. And actually, the only time that's happened was during Ronald Reagan's presidency in the past 20 or 30 years. So that's pretty interesting. You have to start as simply as possible. You also have to break down whatever you're doing to the simplest thing that you can reasonably articulate. Now, we all know a good example of this, right? Don't be evil. We've all heard that a million times. Google's PR machine has drilled that into our brains. But this is actually a terrible, 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 terrible thing to say. Because it's amorphous, it's subjective, it's difficult to hold them to. It's not the kind of thing that you want to set up as the overwhelming vision for your company, at least externally. Now picture this. What if Google had done everything exactly, action for action, what they've done today, but they'd never said, don't be evil? Maybe there'd be a different perception of them. I feel like the tech community in particular, the people who originally bought in and loved Google, would feel a lot better about the company. Because I think that's mostly because, you know, the relationship that you have with your users is just like any relationship. To a girl or going to the prom or something. It's almost better to be disappointed than to be betrayed. Because if you're betrayed, you're hurt, right? You feel like your trust has been, fundamentally assaulted. When you're disappointed, you just say, okay, you can give them the benefit of the doubt. So things like that probably aren't the best way to set up. There are some better examples, actually, from Google as well. If you Google for software principles, they have a great sort of software principles, philosophies on desktop software. So they, you know, say things like, well, you know, don't install without the user knowing it. Don't bundle with anything that violates our anti-spyware guidelines. They're very simple, measurable, and useful things that actually speak to normal people. Unfortunately, the page they have it on is too long, and you know. But I'm sure they'll apply the Google simplicity to that and make it something that's meaningful to folks who are actually interacting with their software, like Google Desktop and Gtalk and everything. Some other good examples. This is one we actually see on WordPress.com, which is pretty tough. Everything that is currently free will always be free. It's a promise to the community, but it's something that we can very easily measure and you know hold to and be held to by the community. It's tough, though. I mean, even something that seems more constrained like this is that, you know, in our stat system, we have a bug where you can sort of type in a number and get archives and stuff. You can kind of get around in the system. Features we didn't actually mean to launch, but now they're out there. So if that's never going to be a paid upgrade or anything, it's always going to be free because we got to stick to this. Another good one was, we will never sell your email address. Now, not a lot of people know this, but if you put this on your sign-up form, it actually significantly changes how people interact with it. They put in different email addresses. They'll use their Gmail instead of their Hotmail, you know. They're more trusting, even though they don't even know you. It's like you just met someone random on the street and they say, hey, I'm not going to sell your email address. And you give it to them anyway. It's just because something about the act of saying it makes it, it makes it more personal, right? It's that you're even talking. The website is talking as a person. The website will never sell your email address. It's a powerful thing. And I'm actually, because it's so, it's been proven so many times that this actually includes sign-up rates and everything like that. When I don't see it on a sign-up form, I'm actually very suspicious. Like, why wouldn't they put that on? It just makes so much sense. You don't entirely want to promise things. You want to visualize, both for the users and for yourself. You need to, and this is important for a couple of reasons. One, it's more meaningful, right? You're showing them or painting a picture more of what's going to happen. But more importantly, once you set up these principles, whatever it is that you're going to hold your community to, you have to judge everything you do after that by those guidelines. It's sort of the measuring stick that, and you know, if it is don't be evil, or if it is we're not going to charge for something that we don't already charge for. I mean, that should be a conversation in every new product development, every new feature. And it should be like, you know, the button in the Toyota factory where anyone can press it. Anyone in the whole factory can pull this cord, press the button. I don't know. I've never been in a factory. And stop the entire assembly line. And this seems like a dangerous thing, but actually it happens very rarely. And Toyota makes some of the best cars in the world. It's a well-known case study. That's, I think, sort of a good summary of if you can sort of reduce it to something simple to say, preferably a sentence, and keep it in mind when you're going through. You sort of have a better foundation to build things on. Next up, you have to bootstrap. So this is sort of step two. You know, you've gotten started now. You set up your form. You only made one instead of 40, you know, using BBPress. You really have to, I say this a million times, those of you who have heard me speak before, heard this before, you have to be your most passionate user. I say this over and over because it's really, really important. If you're not crazy about, you have to be utterly crazy about what you're doing because no one else is yet, right? And they're going to be less crazy than you about whatever you're doing. So you really have to set the bar pretty high. A good example of this. This is Dogster Ted of Dogster.com. I ran into him here at South by Southwest because people from San Francisco fly across the country to see each other. And the first thing he does is he whips out his phone and he says, check this out. And I'm wondering what he's going to show me. And he shows me on his phone, he's got a picture of a dog. And I say, oh, you know, that's kind of what I would expect from dogs to attend. But apparently he hadn't had a dog before. I didn't know this. And I just sort of assumed, well, they also were in Caxter, and they had cats, apparently. But dogs for Ted, you know, he's got a dog. And he said, yeah, we've got a dog as a puppy. It's incredibly cute. And he said, you know, the site's gotten so much better because of it. So get a dog. And that's actually saying something, because the site was pretty kick-ass before. It was very kick-ass before. So the fact that even dogs for Ted can get a dog and make his experience better for his users is pretty powerful. You have to get outside also of whatever your mode of interaction. If it's a form, you got to get outside your form. If it's a blog, you got to get outside your blog and talk to people. This is something that's overlooked so much. And I don't know why. I think it's because we get so caught up in sort of the modes that we're used to interacting with people with, especially online. And we don't really have a huge bandwidth, or much more bandwidth than other places. One of the masters of this actually is Tontek Jelly. This is a picture of Tontek from last year's South by Southwest, and I'd like to just sort of go through this real quick, because it's pretty interesting. He's drinking a Barks root beer, bottom right. He's got not one, but two laptops going, where he's probably inventing microformats or something on them. He's talking on a BlackBerry, probably to a girl, and I don't know if you can see this, but his eyes are closed. He's taking a nap at the same time. This guy's a master of multitasking. That's actually not the example. So the example of Tontek is in the microformats community. They have very high bandwidth discussions because, you know, Tontek is a big, has realized and actually helped teach me that, you know, open source and open development is not just about the license or anything like that. Actually, that's one of the least important things. It's really about the process, you know, the making of the sausage that, you know, sort of makes it what open source is and what makes it great. So developing things in a community way and talking to people and not trying to deal with social problems with software. You know, don't ban someone. Send them a private email and say, hey, what are you doing? What are you talking about? Or introduce them to sort of the etiquette and mores of the community that they're coming into. It's been incredibly effective, and I've loved watching the microformats community evolve. This is Katarina Fake of Flickr. I actually wasn't cool enough to be on Flickr when this happened, so it might just be an urban legend. But so the story is that when Flickr was just getting started, Katarina would actually go to all the new members and go to their photo pages and see what they were taking photos of and introduce them to other Flickr members who had similar interests. I guess it was a manual version of tags. That's incredible. So think if, you know, remember the guy who got no comment? Think if the first comment was from the founder of the site saying, hey, I see you're writing about, you know, being 20 and depressed. Here are some other people who are 20 and depressed. go check them out. And that's super powerful. She's bootstrapping her community, literally pulling it up by the heels and just being crazy, responding to every new user. That's insane, but it's also beautiful. This is one that a lot of people are going to disagree with, but I'm actually a big believer in pre-moderation. So we're going through, so if you imagine the scaling graph, we're right about here. There's a point in every community where the signal-to-noise ratio starts to degrade. And this is actually really dangerous because I think there's a tipping point of assholes where, you know, you let one in and they can really flood. And so, pre-moderation or, you know, for some class of users or comments or something, moderating them before they ever go live. There's ways to do this without impeding the flow of conversation. And, I think it can have a really powerful effect, especially if you combine it with things we talked about before about, you know, talking to a person outside of the blog or outside of the comment section, things like that. Excuse me. All right. So that's, you know, how you should go multimodal, how you should bootstrap. What's next? So you're up here, right? Your community is growing. You're doing everything right. We're assuming your site's not going down. Most important thing you have to do at this stage is actually just the let go. Once you get past a few thousand users, you know, once you're here, your community, your fans, know you better than you do. They have a fantastic idea of where you're going because if you've done it right, you've now bootstrapped people who are more passionate than even yourself. And these are sort of the cornerstones of what you're building on. So I've been saying this for a while, but recently we started drinking our own Kool-Aid, eating our own dog food, if you will. We did something called WordPress Ideas. And basically, this is a system set up where it was meant to encourage, a problem with open source is that the people who have the most sort of prominence in discussions, which is generally on mailing list, is people who have time to be on mailing list. Which doesn't necessarily, and probably, if you imagine the Venn diagram of those people and the people who use your software, there's probably very little overlap. And, or at least the bulk of the people. Actually, my favorite Venn diagram is one where it's like, best times of my life and times I've had pants on. Brad Fitzpatrick loses it in all his presentations, but I couldn't find it actually. So, we put this out there. It's sort of just a really simple, it's a web form. You can put in an idea, people can vote on it. And when we launched this, I have to admit, I was deathly scared. I hadn't really let go yet. You know, I didn't really trust what was going to happen on there. And I thought, you know, it was going to be a bunch of awful features that would sort of degrade it. And since they would be popular, we would sort of have to do it if we're going to truly listen to the community. But it would just be something that really didn't align with the vision of what WordPress is. You know, it would represent a failure on my part and the other developers of WordPress to sort of paint a picture for the community. So we launched about 45 days ago. We've had about 10 ideas a day and 500 plus votes a day coming in, which actually blew me away. This is far more than I would have expected. And it actually turned out great. sort of, if we look at the top ideas here, it's fantastic stuff. It's, plug and update notification, easy updating, tags, thumbnail and image resizing. These are probably all things that if we did a vote here, the majority of you would say, why the heck isn't that in WordPress? And to be honest, this is all things that were somewhere on the roadmap. But now the users have told us this is what's most important. And it's actually, 2.2. It's coming out April 23rd. Don't forget to upgrade. And it's going to include many of these ideas because now it's a very powerful motivator where now we don't just, it's not just people arguing, not just developers arguing with each other. We can point to it and say, well, hey, 450 something people on the website, a meaningful number of all the votes that have been made on this, are saying that they want plug and update notification. Let's prioritize that. Let's, almost no technical problem is insolvable. So let's just point the brains at it and start cranking. And it's been pretty powerful. We're by far not the first to do that. We're not the first to do anything, actually. Salesforce launched this years and years ago. Yahoo has something like this where you can suggest features. Even Dell is doing something like this. I think it's a pretty powerful mechanism. It's a pattern for gathering feedback for the from sort of the less engaged members of the community, the bulk of them, the ones that you want to become more engaged. When people vote on things, another feature that we actually haven't done yet because we haven't done a release since we launched Ideas. But so we're going to launch 2.2 on April 23rd. We're actually going to resolve a lot of the ideas that were proposed. System I want is to email everyone who voted on that and said, hey, 2.2 is out. You asked for tags, and tags are there. Here they are. Now, all of a sudden, each of those people is incredibly invested in what happens. We get hundreds and hundreds of requests a day on WordPress.com, and we launch things. And we don't actually have a formal voting system, but whenever it aligns with something someone asked for, they always say, oh, because they usually asked for it like the day before or something. They connect it in their heads. They say, wow, I asked for this and it's here like a week later. And those guys are fans for life. They will always be WordPress users because, it's a personal connection. It's like they had an effect on the process. You helped out, you pitched in with making the sausage and now you're going to eat it every day for the rest of your life. So you gotta involve people with your sausage. Bring them into the process. You should also think very strongly about open source. And I'm an open source advocate. I drink the Kool-Aid. I wear the Birkenstocks. But it's about far more than just free software or free as in price. Open source, like I said earlier about microformats, is really about a process. It's about involving people. It's about true community discussion. It's about really the community has control of your software because at any point they can take the whole chunk of it and go over here and, play in their sandbox or their playground. So, if you haven't yet, I think that there are enough examples now of large websites, large systems, large communities built on open source software that people don't think that software is a differentiator anymore because it really hasn't been for years. And it's amazing that sort of a unorganized movement with not much money is, threatening multi-billion, hundreds of billions of dollar companies. And that's pretty powerful. So if you're saying we can't do open source or we shouldn't do open source, you should look at everyone else who is and say, what do they know that we know? Or what do we know that they don't? Something to keep in mind. You have to embrace and extend. Talking about multi-billion dollar corporations. Look at what people are doing. So the last slide was basically showing what people are saying they need. More importantly than that, actually, is looking at what they're actually doing and watching their behaviors. And you have to take that and embrace it and extend it. A great example of this was actually my first friend ever on Friendster was a 31-year-old black woman, 35-year-old, whose name is Dr. Rosa Smith. And she was my teacher in high school. If you see the name of this Friendster profile, is HSPVA. This is what's called a fakester. It's a profile that people have created to basically at the time get around the lack of any sort of group or affiliation system in Friendster. If you look there, I don't know if you can see, it says, if you add me to the list and ask for a last name, the full name is HSPVA Houston. So people are actually in the sort of going around the built-in systems where Friendster is supposed to be just about people and creating these affinities. What did Friendster do? They killed Rosa. They actually took the fakesters and actively like had police shutting them down. People were, these had more friends than anyone else. Some of them had tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of friends. And they shut it down. Why? Because it didn't fit with their sort of preconceived notions of what a friend should be. And they didn't look at it and say, well, you know, people obviously want to show they're affiliated with things. I'm also friends with House of Pies, you know, which is a restaurant in Houston. So we shouldn't build that feature. We should just try and point them back into the way we meant to go. And this, combined with many other problems, was created a real market opportunity for MySpace and Facebook and all the high five people, all the people who followed and said, okay, we're going to embrace this behavior and actually code it in to the very bottom. So you have groups, you have, you know, you can pivot on everything that you're interested in because that's how people define themselves. These profiles are about people saying, these are all the things that define me. You know, I'm this and that and this and this band and this movie. And, you know, why not embrace that? It's like the shout feature on Dodgeball. This is actually how Evan Williams described a service. Who knows what it is? Twitter, of course. The darling of this year's conference. For those of you who don't know, Twitter is like an SMS application. Basically, you send an SMS to it, and it sends another SMS to all your friends. That's how it started, which is very much like the shout feature on Dodgeball. Excuse me. It evolved to become multimodal, so you can interact with it on the web, through IM, and everything. And by taking a very small subset of a service which was fairly successful and saying, okay, Dodgeball does location, and it can tell your friends where you are, and it tells you when like you're close to someone, and if a friend of a friend is there. But all that doesn't matter. Location is useless. What's really interesting about this is sort of the group chat feature. And they took that, made it into sort of its own product, and literally a feature becoming a company. And it's you know, had some really amazing growth. And I don't know about you guys, but I've been on it like all the time. It was actually down when I tried it a few minutes ago. Maybe that's why you guys are paying attention. Finally. So you're at this stage now, let's say you're right about here in your community. You cannot do it all yourself. And this is the biggest problem. This is actually the point of it. It's sort of like the death rattle of blogs where the last thing is like, hey, is anyone out there? This is often the death rattle for many communities because they're unable to scale past their original founder. The bandwidth of the person who started the thing is getting thinner and thinner and they can't let go of control. So what's happening is that, you know, the community's starving. It's thirsting for attention or for something, for improvements, for moderation, for something. And it's not there. So this is delegation. This is motivation. Another great thing that you can take from the open source movement is that money is actually one of the worst motivators of people. And there's studies on this and companies and salaries and everything. I actually think this is also one of the fundamental failings of something like paper post, is that if you have to pay people to blog about what your thing is, it probably wasn't cool enough to blog about in the first place. So, you know, there's something fundamentally wrong there. And I got way off track from you can't do it all yourself, but it's kind of self-explanatory. All right, next up, personalization, 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 personalization. This is incredibly important. You know, not for us cool geeks, just for those other people, right? Oh. People want to be unique, right? No one wants to say, I'm just like every other guy in this room. This guy really wants to be unique. And he's expressing it in some interesting ways. For those of you in the back, this is a Louis Vuitton car. Someone has covered an entire Cutlass Supreme with a Louis Vuitton logo. There's a man on it in an interesting position. So what's going on here? People, you know, they need to express their individuality. And I actually think this is one of the biggest failings of Facebook, is that there's sort of extremes here. There's maybe you think of MySpace extreme, where people create that page we saw earlier, which really just bad. You know, this, well, fundamentally, it's more difficult to navigate. People are, there's no sort of unified interface for people to get around. It's somewhat, it can be a bad user experience. And Facebook, which is almost the exact opposite, where beyond your photos and your affiliations, there's almost no way to customize it in terms of colors or anything. There are a lot of services now which are finding a really nice middle ground. Twitter doesn't really let you change a whole lot, but they let you change the background. And people put, you know, crazy images on the back. They'll put a big picture. I got the old WordPress background from like 2002 and put it in the back. It's a really interesting way to say, this is mine. This is, you know, just like the stuff we talked about earlier. It's very, 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 very powerful. Hold on one sec. I don't even have a mouse on here. But personalization is really not personalization. The things I just showed are customization. It's the ability to take something and make it your own. What's more important than that is personalization, blah, blah, blah. Amazon.com recommendations understand Ariel Woman better than her husband. It's actually a fantastic article from my favorite news source, The Onion. And what it's describing is that the woman was very pleased to get two emails, personal emails from Amazon today. And they understand her taste better than the man who's supposed to love her, David Myers. And what it's describing is that, and when I read this, actually, I emphasized with the woman. Not because, you know, my significant other doesn't appreciate me, but because Amazon knows me so incredibly well. It's scary. Every action that a user does on your website is sacred. You have to embrace it. I'm saying embrace a lot. I think it's because the lights are low. And people are investing hours and hours into your website and spending the time there. They're giving you a ton of data. They're telling you what they love. They're telling you what their interests are. Every single tag is sacred. Every single click they make on your website is sacred because it's an act of them telling you what they care about or sometimes what they don't care about. If you're not yet, the only way, because once you get about right here in this scale, what's starting to happen is real overload. There's now too much going on in the community for anyone to sort of take it all in. So what they're starting to do is they need filters. Personalization is fundamentally a filter. It's the only way that you're able to have, you know, well, imagine it like this. You've got, you know, 400 friends on MySpace. You've got maybe like 100 people in your phone book. You have 20 people who you sort of recognize. You know, 5 who'd ask you for a kidney, 2 that you'd give a kidney to. You know, the circle gets smaller and smaller and smaller. And you need ways to filter that out and sort of make it an interesting experience to you. Because you're not the same. The truth is, the reason everyone loves customizing things is that as much as traditional media tries to funnel everyone into a set number of topics or a set number of demographics. They actually literally define you by a number, SAS, where they take your income and your education and, you know, boil you down to a numeric score. That's not how people are. And that's not what new media and this new generation of web applications is about. It's about making it so when you log in, it's completely different from everything else, everything someone else sees, which we'll talk about this later, but it's actually a fantastic strategy if you're dealing with spam. You got to keep it fresh as well. So just like a newspaper, it has to be constantly changing. There needs to be like an element of randomness in there, because the problem I see some personalizations go too far is they will show you only stuff that you know, and there's no sort of element to show you things that you don't know yet. And I would highly recommend putting in some elements of randomness. We actually did this on, there's something called Blogs of the Day, which is like top blogs, top posts on WordPress.com. And it has some pretty strong mechanisms in it to say, if the post is old, you know, push it down. If it's been there before, push it down. These are things that, because if you log in and every day it's the same headline, you're going to think nothing's happening there, even though there's 50,000 posts or something a day happening in the background. You know, you got to make it personal. I actually don't know why the dog is there right now, just to keep you all awake. Yeah, Kathy's here. You have to allow for some correction as well. This is actually a famous article in the Wall Street Journal, and I have a quote from it here. A lot of gadgets and websites feature personalization technology that profiles consumers by tracking what they watch, listen, or buy. Many consumers appreciate having their computers delve into their hearts and heads, but some say it gives them the willies. That's exactly where you want to be, actually. You want to be giving people the willies. If people are just a little bit, if it's like magic, right? What's the saying that any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic? You want the experience of people logging in and interacting with your website to be just a little bit magical. And personalization is a fantastic way to do that. Like I said earlier, I'm addicted to Amazon. It's really ridiculous. I do the Prime. I order stuff. There's boxes in there every day. Stuff I would never buy, actually, which is the beauty of Amazon. And but they figured me out. You know, they know me pretty well. That I actually spent, I'm a fairly busy guy. I must have spent 4 to 8 hours trying to combine my accounts on Amazon because I had multiple ones. Because there's this thing where if you put in a different password, it makes a new account, which is weird. But I was so obsessed with having my recommendations be perfect and my order history and my ratings and everything. I spent like a whole day just, you know, on the phone with Amazon trying to get them to put these accounts together, which is ridiculous, actually. But just shows how irrationally addicted I am to it. If you don't have a lot of users yet, so we're talking about stuff up here, but if you're still down here, a good way to bootstrap personalization is with popular stuff. I call this the People Magazine approach. You know that for some large percentage, even if we don't admit it, you know, when Britney Spears saves her head, we're going to look. There's something sort of like train wreck fascinating about it. And so, you know, through metrics on your site, it's not just, you know, user metrics, it's also people who aren't logged in. You know, the traffic, what people are looking at, number of unique referrers, delta in traffic, all these sorts of things on the website can provide you with really interesting information about what is cool, you know, and what's new. And so even with a complete lack of personalization, you can do this. And this is actually all we do right now. We don't do really any personalization of the top logs and stuff like that yet, but it's the direction we're very much going. Fundamentally, what this is all about is respecting your user's time. Everything I just described. You have to remember that their goal in life, the reason, what they want to do is not use your software. Your software, your community, your website is a means to an end. Usually they want to communicate with people, or they want to, you know, sell their knitted socks, or they want to get laid, or there's something that's a higher goal or a lower goal about your website that's driving them to really spend all their ridiculous amounts of time and energy and spend 8 hours on the phone combining their accounts to do. So remember that. So I talked about a lot of stuff, but there's a lot of big questions that I have not seen yet addressed at this conference that I would love to see people sort of look at over the next year. Some things have all the right ingredients, but never take off. We all have seen examples of this. Some of you may, and I have, built examples of this, where you do everything I just said in that presentation, but something's missing. Actually, prior to Twitter, Obvious Crew did something called Odeo, which they're now selling because it didn't match their expectations of where it was going to go. Why not? I mean, what happened there? And, you know, you learn far more from failure than from success. So can we look at our failures and other people's failures and figure out what was the missing ingredient? Have MySpace, LiveJournal, you know, all these other social networking sites peaked? And the reason I ask this is that if you look at, you know, Alexa, Compete, they all suck, but they can sort of, especially for higher ranked websites, give you a pretty good idea of the trends, the general direction that things are going. For a lot of these sites, it has been flat or declining for a better part of a year. Why is this happening? What's missing there? Why do some standards and APIs never take off? RDF. Things like that. I mean, what was missing there? They had an open development process. This is very similar to why some websites don't take off. I mean, what is the missing ingredient? Where's the traffic? You know, some of the poster childs of the Web 2.0 world honestly aren't getting that much traffic. You know, 1 million, 2 million pages a day, which just isn't meaningful on the web yet. And finally, where's the money? And that's sort of a crass question to ask, but ultimately, if we're going to be honest with ourselves, these things aren't sustainable unless there's some sort of scalable revenue model to go along with a scalable community. Because running a larger and larger website or building, keep maintaining a larger and larger community does take a lot of money. I'm not going to answer any of these. That's actually left as an exercise to the reader. But actually, if you are able to answer any of these, you know, let me know and I'll do everything I can to get you a panel next year at South by Southwest, because these are things that I'm not seeing addressed. I am going to answer this one. Actually, you guys are going to answer it. What is the best scaling social software ever? You can guess. No, not Flickr. I love Flickr, but MySpace. Nope, not MySpace. The written word. Nope, not social. Email. Prize to the guy in front. What's your name? David, congratulations. Email is the most scalable social software yet in the history of the internet. I actually have a theory that any sufficiently advanced social system comes to emulate a good email client more and more, which I guess is a corollary of JWZ, who's was a Netscape developer, said, all software expands until it reads email. And it's very true, because there's something magical about it. There's ridiculously easy group forming. You know, you can just CC people. There's threading. There's conversations that happen. There's public and private interaction. It's, you know, look at email, although that sounds really passe. What's going to kill it? This is an easy one. What's going to kill email? There you go. That was a very, very easy one. And actually, spam is the biggest threat to Web 2.0, I think. It can get anyone. You have to think. I'm glad my friend isn't here. She lives in Austin. You have to think about how your system is going to be exploited by less scrupulous agents. And honestly, if you're not getting spam yet, it means that you're not interesting yet. You know, just that's the honest truth. Because as soon as you get any meaningful amount of traffic or any meaningful amount of audience attention, spammers are actually the master of paying attention to every user action, like I talked about before. They are all about the long tail, so to speak. Where they will target terms that maybe have one or two searches per year, but, you know, they're spamming on 2,000 blogs of it, and as long as they can rank within the first page of that, their business model will scale. They have more time than you, they have more money than you, and they have far fewer scruples. So, you know, think about the exploit vectors for your social software from the very beginning. Bonus round. Woohoo! So I felt kind of bad after I was finished with this. I said, well, man, I asked him a bunch of questions. I didn't give him any answers. So I got some answers for you. I think there's sort of, I talked about the four things. I like the number four today. I think there's also four things that are sort of principal to, you know, not necessarily patterns. It's kind of like more like a grab bag. It doesn't really fit into one of the four main themes, but it's something that you have to do. First one is, like this guy, invest in infrastructure. That's not our system in Barry, but it'd be kind of cool if it was, because that guy looks smart. But sorry, Barry. Speed is a feature. You know, one of the things I think people often overlook about YouTube is not that it had lots of pirated content or whatever. That, to me, that wasn't the compelling thing about it. What was compelling about it is that I went to it and I never saw the word buffering. The curse of Real Player, right? You know, buffering, buffering, buffering. Didn't anyone in the course of the past previous 10 years of the internet say, hey, if you're in the middle of a video and it stops, that's a bad thing. You know, what's the deal there? YouTube had speed as a feature, and so should your website, because there's, if you look at some of the really people with huge metrics like Facebook and Google, they target, you know, 50 to 150 milliseconds for a page delivering or a page generation. The reason for this is that you can actually graph and see, you know, by introducing artificial delays into your page, that the slower it is, the less usage you're going to get, regardless of changing anything else in your application. So not touching any form buttons, not changing the design, not doing anything else. The speed has a big effect. And this isn't just loading speed. It's not just generation speed. It's render speed. So, you know, get something like Firebug and measure what's going on with your browser. See how long different objects take to load. See where the bottlenecks are. Be transparent. And this doesn't mean, you know, doing a long exposure and then ducking away like I did there. It's, you know, involve your community in the process. You know, tell them what's going on. Blog. Let them know, you know, what your problems are. And, you know, this is good for a couple of reasons. It creates empathy. It connects you closer with the audience. And also, you know, collectively, they are far smarter than you. And someone in there has probably dealt with a problem before, and they can help you out. And, you know, it gets them, just like having them vote on ideas, having people vote on ideas or something, invest people in the process. You know, going through your trials and tribulations, the good stuff as well as the bad stuff. Invest people in the process of what you're doing. Don't believe your own press. like I said earlier, you learn far more from your failures than your success. And you learn far more from the criticisms of your software than from the compliments. If no one is criticizing your software, if no one, actually Kathy's here, who came up earlier, has this graph, and she says, there's love over here and hate over here, and in the middle lies mediocrity. You want people to be at one extreme or the other. You want your software to polarize, because if not, you're probably not doing something worth caring about, you know? I actually don't mind at all when people say, WordPress sucks, I hate it, it killed my puppy, or, you know, they really get passionate about this. But that's cool, because this is someone who's taken hours out of the day to write a 4,000-word essay about line by line why WordPress sucks. And this is fantastic, because I can look at that and gather, you know, what is it? And, you know, sometimes there's a skill to this where, you know, you have to sort of read between the lines and not take anything too personally and sort of distance yourself, take a step back and put yourself in their shoes and say, okay, I'm an angry guy home alone. Why does this piss me off? Sorry. what is it about it? And finally, you got to have fun. I mean, if life's too short, time is too valuable to not sort of enjoy what you do and do what you love and love what you do. And there's something sort of intrinsic, like when you visit Flickr, you can tell the people who built this were having fun when they did it. And I don't know how to describe it. There's no metric for it. There's no measure you can put on it, but it's perceptible. And so, you know, you can say, well, I don't love what I'm doing. I'm not passionate. I'm working for someone else. Well, then do something for yourself that you do love. I mean, there's the barriers to entry have never been lower. You know, we are, in my opinion, in a period akin to the Athenian democracy or the Italian Renaissance, where there's sort of a confluence of factors here, like broadband and cheap computing, and the fact that you all were able to pay several hundred dollars to come to this conference, that you're in the upper 1% of the world, and you'll take advantage of that. Embrace it. That's all I got. Thank you. I did save a little bit of time for QA. So who thinks I'm full of it? Don't raise your hand. Stop. if you have a question, sort of raise your hands. We can bring the lights up a little bit. Romantic portion of the evening is over. There's a mic, too. Where's there a mic? Oh, right in the middle. All right. So I've been to several presentations, and there was never room for time for questions. So I actually took out, like, 10 slides. Because I have a tendency to talk a lot. All right, then. Have a good afternoon. I'll see you around South by Southwest. Oh, wait, we do have a question? All right, one question. Run. This is Mike Trimouchet, actually, who was a blogger in Houston who I met years ago before any of this existed. What's up,
hey,
Matt?
How are you? When you're talking about community, scaling the community, excuse me, how far out is your planning horizon? How far out can you look beyond kind of the end of your nose to say, you know, where's your strategy versus letting the community set a direction?
So the biggest website in the world right now, Yahoo, claims to have 300 or 400 million users. So that is the limit of what we've seen an online system. I wouldn't even call it a community, an online system to scale to. What's great about the tech world is that the people at each of those companies, you know, at Facebook, at MySpace, at Friendster, you know, you could email Jonathan Abrams and talk about why Friendster failed, and he'll respond to you. There's an incredible amount of accessibility out there. So I would say, you know, try to find examples of what you're doing at every step along the way. You know, look at things you admire and study the history. Sometimes it's actually really hard to find, for example, the history of Flickr. I don't know if that thing about Katarina was an urban legend or actually true. But you can find it out. So I would say, try to think, look at where you've been in the past year, and try to look at least 1 year out. But know that what you're planning for is probably going to be completely different from what you expect. But the act of having a plan, it's like, you know, when you're doing a startup, you make a business plan, and you do 3-year revenue projections. Anyone who has done one of these knows you're completely pulling them out of somewhere, including the people that you're showing it to, VCs or something. But the act of doing it, the act of saying, what are the possibilities, what are the constraints that I'm going to be working in, is sort of an exercise of discipline that allows you to focus. But more importantly, I think that sort of the examples of what has happened before are going to become less and less relevant as communities fragment and they become more niche players, where I don't think... Yeah, I don't know when it's going to happen, but I think sometime within the next 10 years, there's not going to really be any more MySpaces or Yahoos or anything like that in the traditional sense as we think about them. There's going to be a lot of more niche sites, which might be built on a common platform, but you're not associating it with a common brand anymore. Because the bigger a brand is, the slower it moves. It's sort of like a momentum, right? It's like a snowball going down the hill, except it's like a snowball trying to go up a hill, but getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So, you know, and brand is something that you talk about Yahoo, and if you don't put the exclamation point, they come at you. And that's dumb, because they should just be happy you're talking about Yahoo, not pissed off you got the punctuation wrong, which isn't even good punctuation. Yahoo! So, yeah.
What's hey, Matt. My name is Jacob. I'm with Gaia Online. I was wondering, at step 3, you actually talked about letting go of the community. And at that point, you're going to have people that are so much more passionate about your site than you are that you want them to start leading the community. When you were running the WordPress community, WordPress.com, what was your experience with trying to get those most passionate people to step up into leadership roles in your open source community?
That's a good question. And it's still ongoing, right? I'm a strong believer in the Jolon software theory that it takes 10 years to build truly great software. WordPress is really only 4 years into it, so we got a long way to go. But I think that it's not, I don't know if sometimes you'll have people more passionate than you, sometimes you won't. But the key is that you're involving more people in the process. Because if for nothing else than the bus factor, which is how many people are going to be hit by a bus, need to be hit by a bus before the whole thing dies, you need more people involved. And there's something about as brilliant as each person in this room is, there are ideas that you will never conceive and that someone else will. And so putting more minds into the mix is a very powerful thing. And the tricky thing is that the larger and more complex something gets, the harder it is to grasp the big picture. So you sort of have to step people up. Someone blogged, one of the criticisms, you were talking about critical blogs, someone said, WordPress is obviously crappy software because they only care about, they have bug days. And anyone who approaches fixing bugs as a day, something you do like once a month, is, you know, obviously going to have terrible software. But the person missed the point. The bug days aren't about fixing bugs. We fix dozens of bugs every day. They're about bringing new people into community. And sort of, it's like doing office hours, you know? You're bringing people, you're introducing people to the way things work. And you're building them up. You're helping them, in Kathy Sierra's notation, kick ass, right? Because getting to that point is where, people really start to feel great about themselves and they start to feel invested. And they start to invest part of their personal success and worth in what you're doing. And it becomes bigger than both of you. It becomes bigger than three of you, you know? And that's when it becomes powerful. When you create, if you look at the most successful platforms on the internet, they are ones which have enabled other people to succeed. AdSense pays out more than it takes in. eBay generates way more revenue in the world than they do for themselves. Even, you know, Microsoft Windows. They say for every dollar that Vista makes, it's going to be $16 made in sort of the computer economy. That's powerful. And you can't do that if you try to hold it all in. If you try to, you know, take all the dollars, take all the business, take all the everything, you suffocate what's going on. So power is somewhat like oxygen, you know? Everyone needs some.
I'm another Matt, but if you hit, I'm not feeling lucky, you'll probably hit my site. My question is a personal adoption, like your, and a personal story for you. I noticed that you're wearing a jacket over your t-shirt.
Yes.
And I noticed a lot of people aren't. And I noticed that Ryan Carson was at one of his conferences too. And I'm just wondering, You know, you didn't grow up in Houston wearing a jacket over your t-shirt. I'm just wondering, what's the story behind that adoption in this community?
You want me to take it off? That's a good question. I think it's just purely, I'm in the big room all by myself, and it's very intimidating, to be honest. And, you know, when I saw that, it was actually a surprise. And, I felt like if, you know, respecting you guys' time, we're right now an Insta community, so respecting your time, means that I'm going to spend longer preparing, I'm going to dress up a little more than I usually do, and, sort of be a little more, up here than I usually am. If this had been just a panel with five people here, I totally would have worn a shirt and not prepared. Or, you know, you prepare a little, but you know, that sort of thing. but it's not. So, you know, it's big. It's for you. I know it's silly. People in California never, ever wear jackets. So really, I only get a chance. I actually like dressing up a little bit, but I only get to do it when I go to the East Coast. Which is kind of weird.
What are you talking about? You live in San Francisco. It's like 40 degrees in the summer.
Oh, actually, that's true. So I'm always wearing a jacket. And actually, I feel quite naked in just a t-shirt, even though when I was in Texas, I would never wear anything but not like a jacket.
I just want to say that Matt totally practices what he preaches. I was at Merlin Mann's 43 Folders about 2 years ago at the Edinburgh Arms, maybe, in the city. And Matt totally just came up and said, what blogging software are you using? And I was like, Movable Time. And he said, well, maybe you should try out WordPress. And I was like, no. and he said, no, really, it's got some great features. And while I do lament occasionally having to edit PHP, Matt really is his own best advocate and really gets out there and mixes up with the users. And I just respect you for that. And I very much respect that when you had some issues recently with somebody hacking your source, you really got out there and got in front of it and talked to the user base about it. And I think that's just awesome. So thanks.
Thank you. Thanks. With the hack thing, it was really just transparency. You know, if it sucked to tell everyone to please blog about the worst thing that's ever happened to the software project, but it was the best thing for the community. We're at 12:30, so let's wrap up. Everyone have a great day. It was great seeing you and talking to you.